If maybe we could stand and we'll have Mr. Pizzuti lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and the republic by which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The agenda for today is specifically to go over the new rules that were just passed because the law became effective when the governor signed it, if I'm not mistaken.
Rules haven't passed yet, but the bill has taken effect.
Well, I mean the bill has passed, which means we don't have rules for those things.
Right.
So what this hearing we're going to, the meeting we're having today, is going to look at the new rules that are listed on the bill, and come up with a consensus with that. They put some summaries together for that in our paperwork, and I don't know if any of you, did they get these?
Should be available to
okay.
everybody.
And we'll go through this just one at a time, and so I don't think the meeting's going to take very long today. If anybody wants to speak today, they need to sign the register thing if anybody would like to talk. Also, maybe we could find out just while we're waiting who everybody is that's here today and where you're from, if that's possible. Okay. We're all the board members, and you can see where we're from. And so maybe we'll start over right down here in the front with the Boys and Girls Club. Oh, great. Have we met you before? You're the newbie?
Yeah, I'm the newbie.
Okay. Great. Who's training you? That's what we want to know.
Everybody. Everybody, yeah.
Good. Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
All right. So, does anybody have anything they would like to say from the public before we start officially with, as I understand it, based on what I read in the law, the board has to like vote on these things? Or
well, clearly the way the law is written, we're going to ask you guys for advice,
right?
Because before we go to a rulemaking hearing, we would like to get a consensus with the
right.
board.
That's right. Okay. Great. So, and that's the main thing we'll be doing today. Does anybody have anything, if they've read any of the handouts, does anybody have anything they'd like to discuss before we begin that process? Rudy Johnson.
Is everyone aware that the bill was signed April 3rd? Is everybody aware of that?
I don't know if they knew it was April 3rd, but they're aware, I think, that it was
okay.
signed.
Okay.
Yes.
I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We find out where Dave is.
He's stuck in the web.
He's here because I saw him down.
Oh, he's here. He's trying to find. He's trying to find somebody. We can. Oh, there he is. Oh, good. And he's bringing somebody with him. That's a good sign. He's coming right up the escalator. So we'll wait just 1 minute, and then we'll
review the minutes.
That's true. We might as well do the old business while we're waiting. So if we could review the minutes, and if I could. Thank you, Andrew.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the minutes are approved unanimously. All right, let us begin then with, we'll just look at the summary sheet, I think,
okay.
would be a good idea. And we'll go through this one step at a time from a summary perspective. What the first one says, number 9,
Bishop, before we get started on that, maybe I should tell you that what you have in front of you is a summary. It's not so much a summary, actually, as it is a recitation of the rules, and those changes have been included in these rules that you have right here.
Okay.
There's three types of changes that we're looking at here. There's changes that are required because of the language of the bill changed, changes that the advisory board made the last time that we all met, and then changes that our office have been looking to make, have been envisioning to make for some time now. Okay. So all three of those are pulled together in this document. So if you'd like, when we go through each one, we can tell you what was responsible for each one of those changes.
That'd be good ideas.
Okay, do you want to lead us through those then, Andrew? That would be good, I think.
Just before, you're saying that this summary is now incorporated in this document?
It's not incorporated in the new document yet because these rules have not been adopted.
Right, okay. That's
when they're adopted, we'll be making a new document, of course.
Okay.
And posting it online so that we don't have to pay for printing costs.
Okay.
The first page, rule number 9 there, this is something that came out of the bill. What it does is it changes the number of games. I think you guys are all pretty familiar with that. So what we've done is we've changed the rule to say number of games allowed. No licensee may hold, operate, or conduct a game of bingo or lotto more often than 208 occasions in any calendar year. This was a number that we agreed upon in the last Bingo Advisory Board meeting. I'm assuming that that's still an okay number.
We think that's good, except in the past, there's always been like a couple extra games because maybe when year ends or maybe when the, you know what I mean, when you've always put in more than 52.
Right.
Okay, and so this is basically 52 times 4.
Mm-hmm.
And we're wondering if it shouldn't be like 212 or 216.
216 if you made it 54 a week.
Last year, according to our records, not one licensee played 158.
And I believe that. I'm just saying, from a mathematical perspective.
No one thought they were going to go over.
Yeah.
Nobody reached 158.
All right. Okay. I'm just making a suggestion.
Just off that number.
Yeah.
That's just for discussion.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
So you guys would prefer to see 216 is what I'm hearing, though.
Just because of the 4-4-5 week type schedule that you might be running.
Okay.
Yeah. There's 5 weeks and a quarter every now and then where you get it. You know.
Right. It's, you know, not that much more, I'm sure.
No, it's just...
We can accommodate that.
Nobody, and like Rudy said, nobody's probably going to meet it anyway.
Right.
Okay.
The second part is sale and use of bingo cards and sheets. This is something that actually came from the advisory board. It now reads, a bingo raffle licensee that allows pre-draw concealed face cards trade-ins shall mark or deface all return cards so that they cannot be further played. This deletes that section about having to hold on to the card for 3 months. I think this is something that David said that you wanted, right? So I'm assuming no problems with that.
Where was that in the rules, if you don't mind me, because I had some comments on that.
It's in Rule 5, Section C, Subsection 4.
You know what page it was on?
I don't know what page it is on, but we're
right,
going to
I just found it.
Yeah,
he found it.
47.
All right, what is it saying again? It's deleting what?
It's deleting the section that says retain such trade-in cards for a period of 3 months following the end of, and also deletes the section quarter in which the tickets were redeemed.
So basically C4.
End of C.
The end of C4.
Right. You replace after further played with a period and delete the rest of the sentence.
Okay. That's good. Is it appropriate to make further comments on that rule?
You can make all the comments you like.
All right. Two other points that I had written on so we can get off this subject. That was the big one. On point one, I was just wondering if we could strike the language when it says all pre-draw concealed face cards sold or used at any occasion shall be conspicuously identified. I would like to see that those two words deleted, because in every pre-draw bingo card that's made is already identified by a unique serial number.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what that conspicuously identified would be referring to, other than the serial number that's already there.
Okay.
It's in the old rules.
Yeah, I'm taking a look at it.
You know, I think it was, yeah.
It wasn't a strong color. We went into a problem with that.
All right, Don, we'll certainly take a look at that. Can you say the words that you had problems with again?
Just the conspicuously identified.
Okay. All right, well, we'd be happy to take a look at that. And, I mean, I think, obviously, right now, we can't really say
right.
one way or the other.
This would be for future, exactly,
yeah.
for
we'll
future
take a
consideration.
Look at that.
Patrick.
A little background. I think the reason that language was, if I recall correctly, and this might jog someone else's memory, I think the whole purpose of that was when you had the trade-in feature on the cards, the idea was that we're going to sell you blue cards, and then if you decide you don't like one or two of those blue cards, you bring them up and you get the trade-in, but you buy the other cards, and then when you did, they gave you a red one so that they would know that, oh, gee, this guy's already done his trade-in.
But that's already in the rules. That's still in the rules.
But I think that's where that language came from.
Okay.
I think that's what it was originally put in.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You all right now?
I think if
okay.
we take it, it'll be better.
We'll take
all right.
Number three here is the sale and the use of the pull tabs. This is something that we've actually requested. Rudy, do you want to explain why we want it?
We get many, many complaints from players that all the pull tabs aren't put out for sale, and that some groups will put out all the pull tabs for sale, but they'll be wrapped next to the bucket, and they can't be selected from.
Huh.
So the whole idea is to put them out and make them available for sale, especially on last sale games, because often players will come out and buy the bucket out, and they'll bring more pull tabs out from the back.
So that's really just saying put all the tickets
out for sale. Put them all out and make them available for sale. They can't be put out and wrapped and sit next to the bucket.
If they were
Does
put out.
Does anybody understand what
they
he's saying?
They were sit.
What
they
he's
were,
saying?
They were sitting out next to the bucket.
What he's saying, Tom,
wrapped.
Is if you buy a last.
Wrapped and available for sale.
If
we
the charity buys a last sale deal, when they put that out, all the tickets need to be put out so that the player knows that all the tickets are out there and they can buy choose. That's all that's saying.
Would it be okay if they were still putting them out wrapped and a player said, I want to buy a pull tab out of that wrapped portion?
Why not unwrap them? Are they for sale or aren't they?
The problem could possibly be coming. Some of these last sale tickets are in excess of 16,000 tickets. To put out 16,000 tickets in a bucket is not conceivably possible. You have to use a trash can.
All I'm saying is, if they're not, in our opinion, they're not available for sale if they're sit out there and they're wrapped. And the player, and that's what the players tell us. We don't buy them.
Do we
that's
have
the players tell us.
Do we have any comments from the rest of the board of directors regarding that?
I do see, and not only on last sale, but just you know, there's a couple of very large quarter pickles, and the $1,000 pickle. They're just such a large count that I think it might cause a problem. And of course, coming from someone who doesn't have to deal with that, I can see where they would have a problem. I mean, just as it is, getting just one of those big drums out, maybe
but
one
that,
of the groups
that wouldn't be say, necessarily a last sale bucket.
But it's, it doesn't say only for last sale.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. I mean,
it's only last sale he's talking about here.
So it's not going to pertain to any other pickle?
Mm-mm. No.
So what category? I mean, because there's not a... I don't know.
That's what it's saying. It's a last sale pickle he's worried about.
Right, but if we're still under 6.0, there's no special category.
That's subsection 1 refers to last sale. That's the first part of the sentence.
Okay.
And that's where it's the biggest problem, because the customers think they're buying out the deal, and they're not.
But my impression would be, other than what... I know the vendors have an issue, but my impression would be that I would agree with this, that it needs to be put out so that it could be bought. I would agree with that personally. What
so
about you, Dan?
I think you're right, because I think it should be posted. And if you're going to be selling these things, I mean, I've seen that happen more than once.
Nick or Austin, do you have an input on that?
As a group?
Not with that particular part of it, because I don't think we really get involved too much with
that stuff.
With
okay.
Stuff.
Austin, you?
I think it could be a problem, and I can see it as a player. If I, yeah. if I put myself on the other side of the table, and as a player, I'd like to have the availability of the pickles, because people think manufacturers can put the winners here, put the winners there, do all this other kind of thing. Whether it's a large pickle, whether it's the last sale, it doesn't make any difference. They want access to those pull tabs. That's all there is to it.
Thanks, Nick. Austin, you have any input?
If you're going to put a deal out for sale, put the whole deal and don't hold back any at all.
Okay, thank you. So that gives you input from.
I'm not going to necessarily disagree. I think I could see the logic why it has to be there. I totally understand that. I just have the problem with the rural groups that don't sell pickles out of a pickle bucket. They sell them out of machines. They're at a major disadvantage to sell them out of machines, because there's not a machine in this world that's going to hold most of the last sale tickets that are produced by the manufacturer. So now you've got two sets of rules. You've got a rule for the charity, but a VFW or American Legion, for example, playing last sale tickets, is not going to be able to sell them.
I see some of them, but that's
an interesting policy. I don't. We, as an example, at our organization, we sell entirely by machine, and I can see some problems here. I mean, in our lodge room, I mean, in our club room, and at our bingo, we sell entirely by machine, and I can see some problems coming up. But they're not insurmountable, so to speak. And the only problem I want to see is when we get later on, if I try to put in a ticket that's if I put in a last sale ticket, I gotta dedicate one whole machine to a last sale ticket. That's the problem. I won't buy any more last sale tickets. It's a big deal.
So maybe the Secretary of State's office could review that. Maybe there needs to be two rules. One for machines and one for not. However you want to say
that. Or post that, you know, we don't, you know, I mean, we have a ton of things that they have to post. Just post it, you know, we either do or don't put all the pickles out, or all the pickles are not available.
Yeah,
or I was just because on the view of the player, they want to have that information. For the group, it is an inconvenience. To go ahead and have two separate rules is tough, too. So if they put on the machine, buy the last sale ticket, that all the tickets are not out that are available in this bucket, so you're not basically misrepresenting, you know, last sale. You know, you got 200 tickets in there, oh, I'll buy it out, and now you got another 1,000 in the locker. So maybe just posting on the pickle itself that, you know, all the pickles aren't available might be a possibility as well.
I would agree with David. Some type of signage on the machine would work, because I feel there's two sets of rules right now. If that's the case, then the small clubs are going to be at a disadvantage for not being able to sell last sales. And I don't think that's fair. I think it should be both ways.
Okay.
And last sale tickets are becoming extremely popular in Colorado. So it's not a small matter.
Sure, I understand. Okay.
Okay, we'll take that under advisement. Thanks for your input.
Hold on.
Was that addition to that last sale rule, point number two? Is that all in addition to the rule?
Yes.
It's not in there currently.
Yeah, well, it says in that paragraph, the second half of that paragraph talks about the mechanical machine.
No, I'm talking about point number two.
A?
Yeah,
you're talking about A and B?
It is.
Oh,
it's an addition.
Yes.
What part? What is?
Point number two of Rule 6C. Point number two was never there before, so there's a brand new addition to the rule.
It used to be there, Don. In the rules before this, it was inadvertently left out.
Okay. And then
is there any issue with that for anybody?
So this rule should be in. This one here should be here.
It's not in the current rules.
Not the current rules, so we're going to have to adopt this whole section.
It's proposed.
And A and B, I want to talk about that, though.
I do recall that being in the rules before December 1st of 2006.
Okay.
And so you're putting this back in. I don't know if anybody's just noticed that it's back in, so if there's any issues, we should read it now. It doesn't appear that would be cumbersome on anybody.
A and B is what I... you see, A and B, we have to talk about that?
Let's talk about this right here.
Number two.
That's what I'm talking about.
Two A and B.
Yeah. A and B. A and B is something that I don't see any value for, and somebody, you'd have to explain to me why you want to do this.
Checks and balances. There's no, we have no other verification.
For what?
Of who won the last sale and who bought it out.
Why do they care? Why do you care? I mean, why do you care? We went through this process of not having to fill out forms for $300 winners, you know, and this seems to have the same impetus towards that. And so I'm just wondering why, because it's when the volunteer groups have to fill out more forms and more paperwork, it becomes very cumbersome for them, and then have to get the
status of that last pull tab.
How what?
Winning status of the last pull tab, we have to have some way of knowing that the organization paid that last pull tab to somebody.
Well, what's the LA 32 and 31 and 33 about?
Because that's not on there. This pull tab itself is any pull tab that's left over at the end.
Well, wait a minute.
There is no winning.
What's on the LA 33 is this is how much the payouts are, this is how much you paid out. That's on there from a calculation point of view. You have eight $300 winners, and you have this many replays. What's the total payout? That goes on the LE33 form.
Doesn't identify the winner.
And the point is, why should it?
All other winners have a status of a winner or non-winning ticket. Every other pull tab that's a winning pull tab has a winning status.
Oh, you're
the last one that's bought in the deal.
The 300. So they have a ticket that says $300 winner. The group holds it for 6 months.
Oh, I got you.
So there's nothing to
show. So does the last sale ticket.
Let me ask the manufacturers. Okay.
Well, the last sale ticket also has a demarcation on it that says it's a $250 or $500 winner. It says last sale winner.
It doesn't actually show you what ticket was bought and who bought it. If the organization was a crooked organization, not that they ever have such a thing.
Not
and
either.
Had the last sale pull tab, they would always hold out the last pull tab and the games manager or whoever they wanted it to get that last prize. By doing it this way, we know who was paid the last prize.
Oh, I see what you mean.
It
yeah.
wasn't done by somebody that was cheating.
I understand what you're saying, Norm.
Okay.
Oh, no, I understand what
yeah,
you're
that's
saying.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this, because we need to have know that that was done legally and then done the way it was supposed to be done.
Right. And,
Chairman?
Yes, Nick.
If I may, I totally believe that we need checks and balances, and that they should be available in order to keep us not only legal, but also to preclude there to being any thought about there any being any impropriety when we do bingo and pull tabs, etc.
Sure.
But I would like to see, this thing says keep it for 4 months. Why can't we keep it like in the old days where we had to keep the pull tabs and the flyer, et cetera, for 2 quarters after the quarter that it was used. Because that way, I'm looking at, I do a pull tab this quarter, and these guys, we do our paperwork to them and whatever it might be, it gets into them. By the time they can schedule a visit or get up there, it could be a couple of quarters or a quarter or so down the road. And I want to make sure that when they come and inspect me, that I'm when they leave, they don't leave with any doubt in their mind that I did something incorrect.
This is a specific form that has to be filled out when the last sale goes down, if I'm not mistaken. It's like you get a name, address, driver's license, or whatever it is.
Oh, the LA 37 did.
Yeah.
We've always handed it out. We still hand it out every time we have a class. It's all part of our
Oh, is there a new form?
Yes. Right.
Was this removed from the last rules?
Yeah.
Okay, but that's why, because we looked and we couldn't find it, so they weren't doing it.
Right, they weren't required to.
The form itself is still there, but we just...
They weren't required to do it.
They weren't required to do it, and now you're saying you're required.
Right.
So this will go into the computer system, our accounting system, where they would fill it out just like the rest of this stuff.
Just a quick question. In absence of this rule being there, how are the groups reporting the last sale sold today?
Yeah, there's no, they don't have to.
They weren't using the form.
They don't have to.
They weren't filling the form
out. Wouldn't they just be filling out the form?
They filling out the receipt for the customer.
But wouldn't they just be filling out the form that they would normally fill out for any pull tab ticket?
Sure.
And include the last sale prize as part and parcel
part
of that
of
ticket?
Winners, yeah.
That's identify the winner.
That's what we're doing.
But it doesn't identify the name or an address, understand that. But at least are they identifying that there was a winner paid out?
Oh, okay. Yeah, they have to do that.
You take a pull tab that's not a winner, you have the person sign it and put last sale on it.
That's how you do it?
The ticket, yes.
Right, but there's a specific form they want.
With a specific form.
Oh, I see. You're doing double duty. Uh-huh.
And you staple it on.
That's a good idea.
That's your last sale.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's what you're doing now.
Yeah. That's what we've always
okay.
Done. Right. And, I mean, my only thing to it is that, unfortunately, and I do hear what you're saying, Norm, people are going to cheat. If they're a group that cheats, they're going to cheat no matter what. And the point is of making up a name or putting a name. I mean,
all we can do is what we can do.
No, I hear you. I'm just looking at the other.
Let me ask. There's a group here I know that does lots of last sales. Okay, Tom's group. I know that most of their dollar buckets are last sale buckets now because people buy them out without letting them sit there for so long. You know, and so what do? 90% of your dollars are.
We've got every pull tab we sell now is a last sale.
Okay.
And basically, my want to any specific. I haven't used a specific form because I wasn't aware it was available.
Well, you didn't have to.
Right, you didn't have to.
Yeah.
And now, so just let him finish, Patrick. Yeah.
But so I think this is going to become cumbersome. I do because I have to.
yeah.
But, you know, where is the form available? How do we get
Well, if the rule passes, we will distribute those.
Oh, okay.
And it'll be on the accounting program also. Either one of the accounting programs that people use, it'll be on that.
Still on the website.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe I could just try an explanation that to maybe kind of lighten it up a little bit. Basically, up until December 1st of 2006, everybody was required to fill out the last sale pull tab form. And what it requires is that if I have a last sale winner, I come up to you, I present my winner, and I have to give you a picture ID, and you took all this form was, it name, address, your driver's license number, or your Colorado ID number, or whatever picture ID number that identifies you, all that was put down, and the ticket was kept, and it was simply kept in the files at the games. And working in the field now, many of the groups that I have been working with, even though they don't have to keep that form, are still keeping the form. Now, the reason is, if I'm a crooked games manager, and I'm watching my pull tabs, and it's like, okay, this one here is down to 1,000 tickets, and I'm really keeping my books carefully. I know there's a $500 winner in there, there's a $200 winner, and there's a last sale $500 winner in there. Right there, I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to pull it off the line. I'm going to take out whatever my $1,000, I'm going to put it into my bank account for the group, and I'm going to pay myself the $1,200. And I have caught several people in the years of doing this, doing exactly that. So in other words, I take my I take $1,000, I put it into the account, I take the ticket offline, I cash out the winning tickets, and I cash the last sale ticket to, and I sign anybody's name to it. I can sign somebody's name to it, but there's no ID whatsoever, and I keep $1,200. So I gave my group $1,000, I made $200. And I've seen that happen innumerable times.
No, we understand Patrick's thinking. He's an enforcement.
Is that the only way you can do it on a last sale? Couldn't you do that with a regular bucket as well?
Yes, you can do it with a regular bucket, and I've seen that happen. But on last sales, if you continue to ask them for an ID and to put that down, you're going to discourage 95% of it.
Well, no. The reason I ask the question is because if that rule pertains to a regular bucket as well, if you're going to, because the point is that what you have.
But it doesn't, the rule doesn't pertain to a regular.
No, I understand. But my thing is that if you're either, we're going to have the players know up front that this is a form that we're asking for. So if you do hit a pickle, we just need that information real quick.
Right.
And it's on everything.
Yeah.
And this is what we need. To go ahead and keep everything.
Well, it would basically, what you're speaking about is prize receipts. We would love to have prize receipts in place so that every sum of money, let's say in excess of $100 or more, that you did have to get a picture ID. Guarantee that would stop some of your problems.
We've been there. Well, we've already been there. We've done that.
Now you look at it from a player point of view, and it's like if you go up the hill, every single time you hit any little jackpots and you cash out, you know, $500, you'd have to fill out a form.
Well, it's already on there because you slipped your player card in the machine and
Not necessarily.
But
everybody, if you don't use a player's card and you're winning $500, you're a very poor gambler.
You are. You're playing a slot machine anyway, so it doesn't matter, you know.
But I see where people would say I don't want anybody knowing that.
I'm just telling you from field experience, I've run into.
We have to move on just a little bit here because we're time limited. All right, so you guys have some input on.
Mm-hmm. Can I say just one thing? I'm talking. You know, I play 365 days a year, so I really totally agree with some kind of stipulation on this pull tabs of letting the public know what's in there. Granted, some people can't put a trash bucket out there with pull tabs, but I really think that they need to. I travel a lot of states, and what a lot of states do is they just put a sign that this is not all out.
Okay.
And I don't mean last sale pull tabs. I mean,
you're talking all
sale
the
pull tabs.
Yeah, but that's up to
only fair to the players.
That's up to the group to do that for sure.
It should be up to the group. I don't think it's fair to the players when we don't.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. I appreciate that.
How would you feel about signing something every time you want?
Up in Greeley, we do.
Okay. Dave. Okay. The next page. I don't know how we got to this.
The electronic bingo aid devices. So this amends Rule 7. It's actually not Section A. It's Section B, Subsection 3. And it allows for the catch-up feature on electronic bingo aid devices. So what we've done is we've deleted a section out of this rule. The deleted section says the player aid shall not have a catch-up feature where a player can touch a device one time to catch up to two or more numbers that have been called. This was actually a recommendation that came from this board.
Yes.
So now the new rule would say a bingo raffle licensee shall not allow the passive play of any bingo games by means of any electronic bingo aid device. Any player using such a device shall be required to physically enter each number called by either manually entering the number or by touching a button or a screen icon.
So is this going to allow catch-up or not?
No.
Yes. Yes, it is.
He deleted the last section that talked about.
Okay, so they just by hitting the button, they can catch up.
Catch-up feature.
That's great because now it's a pain, you know, when they go to the restroom and they come back. Right.
Basically, what you're saying is you're not allowing total passive play, meaning cross your arms and do nothing. You're allowing one-touch catch-up. That's perfect. That's fine.
Yeah, that's great. Good rule.
And I think actually John showed us a device where they have to touch a button for the catch-up.
It's a software change for whatever machine.
Okay, the next two sections are promotions by bingo raffle licensees. These are things that are actually embodied in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is Men's Rule 8, Section A, by the addition of cash as promotional prize. And that says the merchandise, services, or cash awarded as a prize. Okay?
Yeah.
The second part of that is Amendments Rule 8, Section A, by the addition of cash as a promotional prize in subsection 2 as follows. The bingo raffle licensee shall not offer merchandise, services, or cash as a prize in a promotion that exceeds $1,000 in value of a single promotion.
Okay?
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody on board with that?
Any objections to that from the board?
I don't have
any. So it's $1,000 cash or merchandise.
Right.
I'll just point out one thing. I'm sure you'll catch it later on the rules. There's also a Class 2 violation. I'm sure you'll catch it. It says if you pay out cash, it's a $100 fine. So I'm sure you'll catch that. It's no longer a Class 2.
I thought we would just leave that section in.
I can't remember exactly where it is, but I'm sure you'll find it.
Okay.
Violations.
Excuse me. John?
Yeah, I mentioned that it's actually Section B.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
You got that.
Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Okay, moving down to raffles. This amends Rule 9, Section B, by changing automobile to motor vehicle for clarification. Rudy, do you want to explain why we wanted that?
Because a lot of Harley-Davidsons are becoming popular now for raffles, and it didn't cover them. So
RV, now it's all for anything motor vehicle. You want. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So moving to the last page, it's landlord licensees, and this is something that was also embodied in the bill. This amends Rule 13, Section C, by the addition of cash as a promotional prize. It says, C, a landlord licensee may award a prize of merchandise, services, or cash in a promotion that does not exceed $10,000.
It's fine.
Okay.
Any objections to anyone from the board? Okay.
All right, so what we will do is we'll take a look specifically at the sale and use of pull tabs. And I can tell you right now that we plan on setting this for hearing probably sometime today or tomorrow, which means about 3 months from now they will actually go into effect. We are going to adopt some emergency rules because, like we said, the bill is actually in effect right now. Mm-hmm. So we want to place a cap on the number of games that you can play and other things like that. We'll take a look at sale and use of pull tabs today and let you know what we think. We'll send you out an email, and we'll probably enact those emergency rules at the end of this week.
Okay. Andrew, do we have a date that you're shooting for to have a whole new rule hearing meeting?
I'm not exactly sure yet because I have to basically when we enter it in the system, they let us know exactly when you actually have to hold the hearing. But it's the whole idea behind the system is that you're going to have plenty of notice, and we'll make sure everybody here knows when that's going to happen.
And what that means is, besides these emergency rules that are being set up that we just talked about today, is there will be another rule hearing meeting where we can discuss all the rules that are in effect.
Right. And if you choose to propose some additional rules, we'll definitely take them under advisement.
And if any of you have anything that in the rules, if you're reading them and you'd like to have something added to or changed, giving that input in via email or letter to the Secretary of State's office is beneficial prior to the rule hearing meeting, so they have some sort of idea of what's going to happen. So I know Don will be doing that for the CCBA. I think you're a member of that, aren't you?
Part-time.
Yeah. Okay, and others. So that's where we are in that regard. So as soon as you know when the hearing will be, we can send out emails to everyone so that they'll know to come and give testimony. Also, how are we doing with the speaker's office, Corky, in regards to John and Tom?
Everything was delivered yesterday. As you
again. For the fourth time. This has to do with adding the seats on the board. They have all the information again. I would like to ask anyone, if they know anyone, because the guy we had to do the public seat got fed up with nothing happening and said, forget it, I don't want to do it. Okay, so if we have anyone that you know that really is objective and isn't necessarily a 365-day bingo player or...
Or just throwing me out the window.
Yeah. Or charitable organization or landlord that has some objectivity towards bingo, if you could let us know that week so we can get them an application to fill out to give to the legislature. It doesn't go to the Secretary of State's office. They don't pick it. The legislature appoints the advisory board.
Correct.
So we're still short one seat, and that would be the public seat.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question for the Secretary of State's office. I heard a moment ago, and part of this is on ignorance and my fault, I'm getting online and finding these changes, but you said that you would post online the changes, et cetera, once they are made to the book, rather than reprint the whole catalog or the whole book, correct?
Well, something that we're trying to do, and it's just a general movement within the Secretary of State's office, is we're trying to become more e-friendly. So that all the bill, so what we're going to do is, and I believe this is going to be posted soon, this new edition of the rules and the statute, but as those rules change, we're going to place a new edition online so that you can just download it and use it that way.
Okay, now, you're saving yourself a lot of money.
Yes.
But you're going to charge us, what I'm asking, is there a way to identify, can you identify when you put a new bill out or a new thing online, whether there are any changes, what the changes are, so that it can bring us, we might be very familiar with this one, but then
sure.
You come up and make them some changes, you've got a new one coming out. Can you identify what the changes are for us?
Yeah, that's not a problem.
I would really appreciate that. That would help us, then we possibly wouldn't have to download the whole, you don't print 50 sheets of our own, we could just print the changes.
No, that makes good sense. We can do that.
Especially with this new the new layout, Darlene, good job.
Yeah, really? I'd appreciate something like that.
Isn't that in basis and purposes anyway?
Yeah.
It's in the notice of basis and purposes for the rules, but we can do that. And it's always been there, but just not right with the rules themselves. Yeah.
Some of us aren't swift enough to go look around.
Yeah, the basis and purposes statement will give a summary of every change.
Oh, okay. Great. Then I have nowhere to look. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Andrew, because these are emergency rules, I would just clarify that point on the cash. That was violation B3. And also, I just noticed I'm going on the old rules, but if you want to, I think you're going to have to put this in emergency rules because they'll be contradictory to each other. So that was B3.
That'll be part of the emergency.
Note of that.
And also, you're going to have to do class 1 violation A5. You'll have to change that as well because that's where it talks about 158 bingo occasions.
Got it.
Okay.
So, Andrew, before we set the next meeting date, what I'm wondering, when we have a rule hearing, is the Bingo Advisory Board meeting at that time or not?
No, what would happen is actually Bill Hobbs or Mike Coffin, whoever actually
would
chooses
run that meeting.
To run the rule hearing.
Yeah,
it's basically it'll probably happen right here. Bill Hobbs will be here. I'll be here. Rudy will be here. Basically, just available to answer any questions that you guys might have, and that gives an opportunity for the public to actually talk about the rules and if they have any issues, bring up those issues then.
Okay, so I'm wondering if when we need another advisory board meeting because. We're kind of waiting for.
Well, you know, what I'm thinking would be a good thing to do at the next Bingo Advisory Board meeting, be it a month or 2 months from now, is actually go over some of the pages that have been developed for the new online system. We're actually doing a lot of work on that portion of it, and our IT department is doing a bang-up job of pulling that together pretty quickly.
That'd be great.
So maybe that would be an opportunity to look at some of those pages.
Okay. And so why don't we make it 2 months? And so that would be June, is that right? This is April, so May, June?
June
the 2nd.
Works.
June 11th.
June 11th.
And the rules are going to be approved by July or what?
What? What'd you say? The rules?
I was under the impression that the rules had to be, or won't be, in for 3 months.
No, the new rule hearing will be a ways, but the emergency rule will be by Friday.
Basically, what happens with the whole entire process is we have to make a note for hearing that gives the public notice that we're actually doing something and changing the rules. So you actually post that. It's got to be out there for a certain amount of time, in this case 20 days or more, so they actually have notice. We go through the hearing, and then 30 days after that, they actually become effective.
So is that 30 days roughly? 3 months?
It ends up being about 3 months, the entire process.
So...
What's
the meeting? So the meeting before,
that.
We're not going to have a meeting after.
In
that
June, meeting. We're going to have a meeting discussing what's going online these days,
right.
What they're
right.
working on.
Okay.
And whatever other agendas anybody would like to throw in by that time.
and then a meeting after the.
And then there'll be our advisory. Then there'll be a real hearing meeting by then, hopefully, after that.
And then you can come and like.
Right. No. I'm saying for the next. So. Okay.
For the next meeting.
I thought we were trying to not have so many advisory board meetings.
Well, the next meeting will be the next advisory board meeting, June 19th.
Yeah.
19 or 11?
11.
11. Sorry.
And then we'll just figure out after that when we're going to have another one.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Dan?
Who's calling me? Oh.
I have something I'd like to throw out.
What's your name?
Karen Shield, Boys and Girls Club of Weld County. When we're having groups dropping like flies, I know in the House bill it talks about qualification of 5 years for a group. And I know there's nothing we can do about this right now, but I'd like to just kind of drop it in for people to think about if we could drop that down to 3 years instead of 5 years for a qualification for a bingo license.
Well, the thing that makes that very difficult is that it's actually embodied in the Constitution, so it's going to require a constitutional provision which has to be voted by the state.
And about $1 million.
Yeah,
basically.
But if bingo has to go to a constitutional amendment, you can throw everything in there by that time, and so it's possible. We still have to talk to the Department of Revenue. We still have to do lots of different things, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And so it's possible that a constitutional amendment may come up for bingo. People will want to keep saying, why can't we pay a caller? Why can't we do this? You know, things like that. And those things require constitutional changes. And so.
Where would you want to drop that?
Okay.
Yeah, just to make my point on the registered elector,
yeah.
It can be a bingo player.
It can be.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Rudy.
There's no restriction against it.
So there we go. If any of you know somebody who would like to be on the bingo advisory board to give, no, but you're also a volunteer for an organization, right? Yeah. Then please let us know because, you know, this is a seat that hasn't been filled for quite a while, if I'm not mistaken. Well, none of them have lately, but. All right.
Okay.
I think so. Okay. Any other things? Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
I second it.
Okay. All in favor? All right. Meeting's adjourned.
We pushed this room.
You said he had an hour?
Yeah. I did. I'm back. She's 20.